Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Monday, January the 6th, and we're reading from the Big Book. We're continuing our study of the chapter, How It Works. We're on page 69, the second paragraph. In this way, we try to shape a sane idea. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Mary F., 12 Traditions, Judy O., and readers of the text, Chanel T., Karen K., and Susan S. H. The reference numbers for yesterday's special edition, Sunday, January the 5th, is 22053. That's 22053. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Mary F. is going to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Lynn. These are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and His power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This is Mary F. from Virginia, and thank you for allowing me to do service. And I pass.
Thank you, Mary F. And now Judy O. is going to read the 12 traditions. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop overeating. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group will never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass, thank you for letting me do service.
Thank you, Judy O. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. So today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter How It Works. On page 69, the second paragraph, in this way we tried to shape a saying. And we'll be reading that one paragraph only. And this morning, Chanel T. is going to read for us. Good morning, Chanel.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. This is Chanel T. I'm a grateful compulsive eater, gratefully recovered in Washington State. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. And you know what I'm going to say? I love this paragraph. I've said that. I say that about almost every one. A sane and sound ideal. So Merriam-Webster offers a couple of relevant definitions for ideal. A standard of perfection, beauty, or excellence, and an ultimate object or aim of an endeavor, goal. So in step 4, what did I do? What am I doing? I'm uncovering, I'm digging up all those skeletons in my closet, in my basement, in my backyard to bring them to light, because this is part of the clearing and unblocking from God process. And with this part of my life, anything around my sexual being and how I've operated in these relationships, I have a fifth column of my inventory. So I'm going to God directly, and I'm asking where I've been selfish. What's my ideal? So in my case, that's not just, oh, I flirted with my friend's guide who upset her. Didn't touch him, but I flirted with him. Or I flirted with somebody to get a better schedule. No, so I won't do it again. That's the ideal. No, it's not just that. Or I had an affair, which I did, so I won't do it again. No, it's more than that. It's seeking a sane and sound, unselfish ideal. How would God have me show up in these relationships? How would God have me operate as a person who does have a sexual part of myself? What does that look like today and moving forward? And noticing that it says, that it's not about shame batting myself. That's not why I'm doing this. I'm not hitting myself with the shame bat, as a fellow I love says. It's about coming into a healthy way of looking at myself and others in relationship as I have a sexual part of myself. Anyway, it's something to think about often, not something to barely look at once in a while. I think it's an ongoing thing for me as part of this work that we do. But here I'm doing it very specifically for, and I look forward to hearing others talk about this same and sound ideal today. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chanel T, for getting us started. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on, what's today, Monday, Thursday or Friday, step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Loretta H.
In New Jersey.
Okay, I heard Loretta H. Who else was there, please?
Dina A. New Jersey.
Abby D.
Lisa B. in Colorado.
Okay, let me tell you who I heard. I know I missed somebody. I heard Loretta H. I believe it was it Dina A, Abby D, and Lisa B? Who did I miss, please?
Julie B.
Dara F.
Dara F. Okay, here's our lineup then. We'll start with these, and then we'll take another round. I've got Loretta H, Dina A, Abby D, Lisa B, Julie B, and Dara S. And if you could please also tell us where you're calling from, that would be great. So Loretta H, please go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn, and good morning all, along with my precious God, you do save the life. Thank you, and welcome, welcome to the newcomer in this new year. I'm a one day at a time recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. Ideal. I also looked it up. I liked the first reader that looked it up too, and it said perfection and supreme. And I go to a meeting before this meeting, and some girl said it's not perfection, it's about connection. And so today, that's where that ideal comes in. And the supreme is my higher power. The only way I can form any type of relationship is by getting unblocked and finding out who God wants me to be, because I am a selfish person. And I actually did a inventory. I've been married as in 20, 50 years. So I did an inventory on my marriage, which was very interesting. You know, where was I selfish? Where was I jealous? Where was I bitter? Where was I destructive in this relationship? And it really opened my eyes. And I still have work to do on that. I'm working this year on something that drives my husband crazy. And I really have been praying about it, on how to uncover, discover, and discard this defensive character that I do have. And I am so grateful for a program. Today, I celebrate a birthday, and I do it one day at a time, 8,765 days of recovery. And it's not perfect, but it has been about connection. And my supreme higher power, because in finding myself in these steps, I found God. And that's how it is. And today I know God, because I have peace so that I don't take a piece out of myself with the anorexia or out of somebody else. And with that, I pass. And relationships, it's about connection in all my relationships. Thank you for letting me share. God bless everybody.
Thank you, Loretta H. in North Carolina. Next, we have Dina A. I think I got that name right. Good morning, Dina.
Good morning. Yes, Dina A., New Jersey. Gratefully recovered today. And I love this part about the sane and sound ideal. My sponsor had me do it when I did a fourth step on every single relationship, this harms inventory, not only on relationships that had anything sexual involved, relationships with my children, relationships with my sisters. And it was really very good. I think that right now I'm sharing to say that in my 10th step, I have that line of prayer at the end, God, please help me mold my ideals and live up to them. And I don't always stop and do that at the end of the 10th step. I think right now I was reflecting because I always feel like I took enough time from the person listening to my 10th step. But when I do, and this is reminding me to do it more often, it's such a vital, important part of it. It's always so like, I'm like, mold my ideal. What's my ideal? And it's like, I don't know. And I have to sit for a minute and have God like drop it into my head. My ideal, if I'm feeling strange that my children are coming and both are going to want the better guest room. And my ideal is they're adults. Let them work it out themselves. Just take a step back and to know that I like just to separate my value from what my children are going to think about me. Like my ideals are not always, you know, it doesn't always only have to be sexual relationships that need ideals. And once I mold my ideals, not me, once I have God mold my ideals and ask him to help me live up to them, the whole inventory gets a new, like, completion. It gets a new shift, like a bigger shift that I'm actually able to use or God's able to use in my day practically. So it really is just such a beautiful, like, this program is so incredible, and each line in the big book just adds a whole dimension of life. So with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you so much all for being here, all for making meetings happen every day that I listen to recordings of, and I'm grateful to be on live and sharing now. I'll pass.
Thank you, Dina A. from New Jersey. And next up is Abby D. Good morning, Abby.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name's Abby D. I'm recovered in Michigan, and go Lions. Detroit Lions are amazing. And I just watched the game last night with my husband, who I love very much. And this paragraph is, like, I love that there's a point to the sex inventory. Like, I take inventory of my past harms and how I've behaved in relationships in the past, so then I can move forward striving for what God would have me be. And, you know, I love things that have like an objective to it. I'm not just doing all this just to look at my past. I can move forward. And so, you know, I've seen ways that I've acted selfish in the past, and my living amends is like to treat my husband with like the most respect and to cherish that relationship and be honest and communicative. And, you know, all the things that I've learned that I wasn't in my past relationships, I can put forward today. And, you know, the big book is going to start to tell us that like if we don't do this, then we could be at risk for eating again. So nothing is going to motivate me more than the risk of going back out. Like, I don't want to go back out. I take this very seriously, like the sex inventory part. I take it very seriously. And so I have to, you know, I have to look at these ideals of like, what would God have me be? And then God help me live up to these ideals. Like, please help me live up to these. And because if not, then I could go back out. So, just really appreciate that there's an ideal for all situations not just sex, but any sort of inventory I do, there's always an ideal of like how I can move forward, and it gives me something to strive for. And I like that, like moving forward, I have something that I can look towards of how I want to be rather than like just focusing on where I went wrong. So anyways, thanks so much, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Abby D. from Michigan. Next, we have Lisa B., followed by Julie B. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Lynn. My name is Lisa B. I'm from Colorado. I really like this paragraph. It reminds me of the way I used to use men, you know, like I would go for these high executive types, and it was like, what's going to be in it for me? Like a nice meal. One of the things was a nice meal and seducing and taking whatever I could get. I'm also a recovering sex addict, and God has repaired that part of me, and that instead of having shame or arrogance around my sex life, I look for mutuality and love and respect. And I believe that that's what God wants for me in that area. As far as the food goes, in the past few years, I've had no sex relations. I've been so ashamed of my appearance, of my weight. You know, people tell me, oh, you wear your weight well. Well, it doesn't feel well. It's hard. It hurts. It's embarrassing. You know, society's stigma is really cruel. So I haven't been engaged with my sexual nature. And as of today, I've lost 37.5 pounds since May. And I'm starting to feel like I'm in my body again, like the sensations of being inside my skin feels good, and I'm not numbing out, you know, and I look forward to meeting a partner that is in alignment with God's will instead of my own selfish, self-centeredness nature. So I'm healing. And I hope everyone has a great week. And thank you, Lynn, again for your service. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa B. in Colorado. Next up is Julie B., followed by Dara S. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much. It's Julie B., and I'm from Akron, Ohio, and I am a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. In my experience with ideals, this time around in the steps, you know, really looking, my sponsor wanted me to focus on God and myself first, of making like amends. And so I wrote down the things that I felt like I did to God. And those included, you know, not going to him first, not seeking his will in different situations. And so on the opposite side of that, like, paper, I would write, like, okay, now, God, I go to you first. I ask you that next right action, you know, that next right action prayer. I do what you have me do, God. Like, these are the amends and, like, the ideals that I am doing my best to remember and to read daily and to record, like, on my phone so that way I can understand and seek that out. And then, you know, the amends to myself, it includes, you know, something as kind of silly as like wearing my hair the way that I want to wear my hair. Like, you know, part of me is people pleasing and wearing things that, you know, I know my husband loves, and of course that's a nice service, but it's also like, what does Julie want? You know, what does Julie need? Like, that is something that I is in my recovery, is just taking care of Julie. And, you know, I'm not responsible for other people's thoughts and feelings. You know, I'm focusing on my self-care, and others are benefiting. It kind of played out yesterday. I wrote out a little ideals of family, and it comes from our first tradition. And it's basically, you know, our common welfare, you know, unity. And I took my nieces to the movies, and they were arguing, and like, they have their all the things, you know, they have the food that they want. They're at the movie they wanted to see, you know, like, we're good. And I did an amend for myself where I lovingly reminded my nieces, it was a great opportunity to try it. And I just said, hey, I need us all to have unity, and we need to focus on the things that are going right. You know, we need to focus on our differences. And it was just, it was awesome. It was such a really great way to kind of practice, like, the ideal is when I'm with my family, I don't want gossip. I don't want us talking about other members of the family. I'm focusing on the negative that's going on in our lives, but we're going to build each other up, you know, and that's all due to the tradition. So there's just so many different places to find the ideals, and I'm grateful, really grateful for this program. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie B. from Ohio. Dara S., good morning. It's your turn.
Hi, this is Dara F. as in Frank, and I'm calling in from Virginia. And I'm actually in New Orleans right now visiting my mother, but I live in Virginia. Every night when I'm doing my 11-step inventory, and I look at what I'm loving towards all, I think especially immediately my husband comes to mind. And I think a couple of things about my husband. I pray every morning that God show me how to be a good wife, and show me how to be loving and kind and respectful and to do service to my husband. When we first met, I was all over him all the time. I gave him back scratches. I was very attentive to him, and I would do like anything for him, do his laundry, do his, you know, dishes, whatever, anything, just to, I'd go sit in coffee shops and be bored while he did his writing, whatever, just to be with him. And now we've been married for 21 years, and he's more like furniture. And I just pray not to treat him like furniture. And just sort of like, sometimes we'll be in the house all day together and we'll say 10 words to each other. Hey, how you doing? You know, I try to look at him in the eyes when he's talking to me instead of just sort of continuing what I'm doing. But I still, every time I get to that, was I loving towards all, I think, no, I could have been warmer to Andy. I need to be a warmer, gentler person to Andy. And, the other thing that I have a real danger of in my, that I fall short in my ideals is I tend, if there's a man who seems to have some interest in me, I get into this flirtatious mode, and it's not appropriate. And yesterday I got into that with somebody, just sort of like being enamored by the fact that I was getting some attention. And I thought, no, you know, I'm a married woman, and I don't need to flirt just to boost my ego. And I asked God for the willingness to just say, excuse me, and walk away. And I did. And I think the more I do that, it's like avoiding sweets. The more I ask for help and the more I turn it over, the more I can. Anyway, thank you. I pass, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Dara F. from Virginia. Just a reminder for those of us who may have come on the line a little bit later this morning, we're continuing our study of the big book in the chapter, How It Works. We are on page 69 in the paragraph, In This Way We Tried to Shape a Sane and Sound Ideal, and we're sharing on that one paragraph only. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you share it on Thursday or Friday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Priscilla H.
Anyone else?
Chris G. in Tennessee.
Okay, I've heard Priscilla H. and Chris G. Who else would like to share?
Cheryl L., Florida.
Gotcha, Cheryl. Anyone else? All right, well, let's
go
with those.
This is Larry.
First.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Larry.
I figured
Larry, what's your last
name? Let's throw a guy in here. K is in kitchen. Thanks.
Okay, and where are you from, Larry?
From Chicago. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with this lineup, and then we'll pick it up from there. We've got Priscilla H., Chris G., Cheryl L., and Larry K. Priscilla, please go ahead and let us know where you're calling from. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Priscilla H. in Central New Jersey. And I've been looking forward to sharing on this particular paragraph. This is an amazing 2 pages. I still use a paper paper big book. I don't do the electronic thing. And on the 2 pages that I'm looking at right now, page 68 and 69, about the fear inventory and the sexual inventory, I counted the word we and us and ours, different versions of that plural word, 66 times, 66 uses of we, us, and our. So I guess this is not a solitary program. Certainly the guys who wrote the big book were not solitary people, and thanks be to God for that. Otherwise, I probably would not even be alive today, because I'm grateful for this book, which gives me the message I needed and still need to live. But there is one use of we and I that is in today's paragraph that speaks loudly to me. And that's where it says, we asked God. I asked God. So it's not, I'm not yet into we, the fellowship. I'm into we, building a relationship, developing a relationship with the higher power of my not understanding, as I so often say. I don't have to understand God, the higher power, the Holy Presence, my BFF, however you think of it. I don't have to understand. What I do have to do is continue today to develop my relationship with that entity, which is so real to me. So with that, I'll pass, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Priscilla H. Next up is Chris G., followed by Cheryl L. Good morning, Chris, and can you just remind me where you're calling from, please?
Yes, this is Chris G., and I do live in Tennessee. And thank you, everybody, for being here. This idea of having an ideal, I would say that before I read this in this book, I had an ideal, and that was an ideal that he be tall and handsome and smart. And, you know, my ideal was what he should be, not what I should be. And it says, for us to live up, we ask God to mold our ideas and help us to live up to them. And that we remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, never to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. And I think I at one time got into the despised and loathed situation because after I'd been married and divorced 3 times, I decided not to do that anymore. And I didn't have a relationship like a special friendship with a man for 10 years. And then I met this man, and he had he had the same idea. When he got divorced, he said, no more of this. And he hadn't had a special relationship with a woman for 20 years. And so we started having coffee for first thing in the morning. He would come over and we'd have coffee together. That lasted for about a year, and then he went into a nursing home. So we just talk on the phone now. But it was a special year, us having coffee for breakfast in the morning. He would come over and I'd make him a cup of coffee. And it was a special, special time. I enjoyed very much. And I think it was God-given. And so we can't cut ourselves off from something because we decide. We have to cut ourselves off as it's God's will. And if it's God's will for us to have a special man, Lord, let's do it, you know. But if it's not God's will, so it's God's will for me to be what God wants me to be. And if I'm not, then I should have an ideal to get more in line with God's will. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris G. from Tennessee. Now we've got Cheryl L. followed by Larry K. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Cheryl L. I'm calling in this morning from Florida and grateful to be on the meeting with you all today. I have been blessed, you know, with a second chance, you know, at a special relationship with a man. And he is in recovery as well. So we have a, we have a relationship that is built on trust today. When it came time for me to make my amends, my husband was one person that I did have an amends to make to, because when I look back on my past, I realized that I had depended on him way more than I should have. By the time we were married, I was an adult, and I was capable of taking care of a lot of things in my life that I then just kind of turned over to him and let him deal with. One of those things was finances, and to this day, I feel like I still owe an amends to him because I just let him, you know, support me, and I took whatever jobs I felt like doing. I didn't take a job that was really, contributing in a meaningful way financially to our household. When it comes to this thing about being the best partner and being, what our ideal turns out to be, I'm looking at what I have written here, and it says that my ideal is to be the best partner I can be. And so for that for me today involves being financially responsible, being cognizant and aware of what his needs might be, and stopping when I want to be selfish and consider my own needs. And sometimes that does come to happen when I make impulsive decisions. And I did one of those, recently where I just kind of threw the two of us out there to do something without first consulting him. And so this is part of the ongoing process for me with my 10-step and 11-step, that I look at my behavior, that I go to him and I apologize. I think the relationships that we have that are most easy to abuse are the ones that we come in, people we come in contact with on a daily basis. And so, with that in mind, I keep trying to be the best partner I can be. And I do try to pause and ask God what the right thing is to do in specific situations. This is a wonderful program, and I'm always growing and always learning. And I thank all of you for your shares today. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Cheryl L. from Florida. And next up, I couldn't hear if it was Larry G. or Larry K., so surprise me. Hi, Larry.
Oh, that's okay, Lynn. I can mumble sometimes. And that'd be okay if it was Larry G. Either Larry is good here. So I'm Larry K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. And I'm woefully imperfect. And that's part of this deal here, it says, okay, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. And, I'm going to need God. because I don't know about anybody else. I know about me. I've had struggles in this area for sure. And, you know, it isn't of great utility to me to ask why too much. I mean, I could, because then I go off and I stay absorbed in me. Why this? Why that? What was it in my childhood that made it? You know, even if I could tell you that in my childhood, perhaps, you know, there was some traumas and so forth, and that created issues with intimacy and fears of abandonment. I mean, perhaps you can relate to some of these things. Look, we all have sexual problems. We'll read this. We all have sexual problems of some sort. We'd hardly be normal if we didn't. I do. I have issues with this. But for me, the thing is, you know, I'm going to need God. And in working these steps, I learned that I'm going to need to surrender to God. And I do that on a daily basis. I try my best because I want to be the best partner I can be. Not only in an intimate, romantic type of relationship, yeah. But in my relations in general. But I know that we're talking about sex here, right? I thought, okay, well, I'm hearing a lot of women, and this is great. I learned so much from you guys, but I'll jump in here too. And I'll say that I'm a work in progress, and honesty, trust, integrity, and all these things, you know. But a big thing for me too is shame, you know, carrying shame. And, you know, God has worked on that for me. He has helped me. He has done tremendous things in my life. But I'll never get to an arrival point where I have all this figured out. My goodness sakes, no, I don't have it all figured out. But I do the best I can. And in a partnership, I do the best I can. And I could do better today, you know, because I have to look at me, not the other person. Look at me and bring God into this. That's been what's been most helpful for me. And I'll continue to do that. I work the step this way, and I inventory these things, and I'm a little bit better today. Lynn, thanks. Sorry for mumbling there. Appreciate you. I'll pass.
That's okay. Thank you, Larry K. from Chicago. Okay, it looks like we have time for three or four more shares. Who would like that time, please?
Sandy S. from Asheville, North Carolina.
Sandy S. Who else?
Roz G.
Gotcha, Roz. Thank you. Two more?
Dear F.
Sorry, what was your first name?
Shir, S-H-I-R.
S-H-I-R. Yeah.
Last initial F is in Frank.
Okay. So I've got Sandy S, Roz G, Shir F. Anyone else? All right, let's go with those three, and we'll see if there's somebody else at the end. Sandy S. from Carolina, please go ahead. Sandy, press star 1 to unmute, please.
Okay, thanks. Sandy with an I-E, S-A-N-D-I-E. I'm mentioning it because I'm interested in sponsoring. And in terms of a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life, I have been totally insane with sex. And, you know, going from one extreme to the other, you know, and it really reflected, you know, my personality. And my ideal is to be emotionally balanced. But the truth is, I'm not. And I'm not on my own. Let me say it that way. And that is the reason I absolutely need God to mold my ideals. I've been in recovery for a long time. And the most important thing for me is just to allow myself to experience whatever I'm experiencing, whether it's anxiety, whether it's self-criticism, whether, you know, there's a poem called The Guest House by Rumi, in which it says just to welcome everything that comes in. So what happens is all these things come in when I'm just alone with myself. But then when I'm relating to another human being, a lot more other things come in. And the beauty of being in recovery for so long is just that I have choices now. And the first choice is to just allow whatever emotion I'm feeling to be there. And then the next choice is to really pray to God to show me what the next right action is. And that's all it is, whether I'm in a relationship, whether I'm by myself, whether I'm with the food, whatever experience I'm encountering in that moment. Because I have this illness, which will kill me, compulsive overeating, it is so important for me to call God into every single decision I have to make. And then the hardest thing is to really let go and see that God is there. And that's about all I have to share. And with that, I pass.
And where are you calling from, please, Sandy?
Asheville, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay, that's Sandy IES calling from North Carolina. Roz G, welcome. And where are you calling from, Roz?
Well, thank you, Lynn. What a fun topic. I think it was funny at the beginning of the meeting. I'm Roz G. I'm a compulsive overeater recovered in Palmdale, California, which is Los Angeles County. And I've been on this meeting a few, you know, many years, actually, this Vision for You meeting. And whenever we get to the sex inventory part and the announcer says, the moderator says, okay, I'm ready for shares, it's silent. And it was that way again today. And then people spoke up. And yeah, I'm just speaking up because it's kind of sparse with voices. But I would like to say, I don't know how this is going to sound, but this is very, I am a single, attractive female who is in the dating game. And the reason I'm attractive is because of Overeaters Anonymous, because of having a food plan, and because of taking very good care of myself, because of God and the grace of God, you know, that's why I consider myself to be attractive, like physically and like emotionally and friendly and soft, because I was not before. I was hard and standoffish and put-offish and curt. But today, God, by the grace of God and good sponsorship, especially a current sponsor I have, has spoken a lot with me about softening up, because she told me that men, for me, being heterosexual, men can sense hardness in women. And I'm practicing a sex ideal, a dating plan today. And it's like a food plan. It's some, you know, things that I will engage in and things that I won't engage in. And at my age and through, you know, experience of having like, you know, sex as a game, it's very painful. So I don't do that today. I don't date married men, and I don't date men who are like going through a divorce. And I watch for red flags, and it's just not a game. It's a serious, for me, it is very serious. It needs to be within the boundaries of a marriage or very close to it. And there's two men that I'm actually interested in today. One of them is at my church. One of them is at the dog park. And he called me sweetheart yesterday. That's been a while since you know, that happened to me. And but I have to remember that I'm not a teenager anymore, and that I've had a lot of life experience, and that I practice a 12-step program, and that my relationship with God is more important than anything, and that I seek God's guidance. And so I don't want to hurt myself or hurt anybody else, and I would like to get to know somebody very, very well before engaging in like the act of sex, the physical act. I would like to be emotionally available, and I would like a partner to be emotionally available before engaging in anything like that, getting to know that person very, very well. And walking around the dog park and just talking about all kinds of things in life and having that in common has been really nice. It's just God's guidance and depending and asking God each morning for an intuitive thought or action and watching for red flags.
Time,
and
please.
Not hurting anyone. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. from California. Next up is Sheer F. And where are you calling from, Sheer, please?
Hi, this is Sheer F. from Northern New York. And yeah, like Roz, I heard the silence and I said, oh, maybe it's time for me to share something. My sex addiction started not long after my food addiction, and it was very young. But it was not because sex was so awesome. It was because I felt like crap all the time, and I needed validation. And the only way I knew how to get that validation was through getting a man to sleep with me. And unfortunately, kind of like a piece of candy, the high didn't last very long, and so there'd have to be another one and another one and another one. And so, you know, now as sort of this settled middle-class woman who was, you know, married for 20 years and monogamous and am now in a deeply caring monogamous relationship, I look back on that time in my life and I think, my God, I was such a hurting puppy. You know, it was just pain. It was pain that sent me to the food and pain that sent me to the sex, but I did hurt people along the way. Not all the guys were in it for the same reason that I was, and I hurt them. And thank God for the 12-step process in which I was able to make amends to the best of my ability. With sex, it's not always easy to go back and make those amends, but I was able to make amends by changing my behavior, my mindset, you know, my approach, my feelings about men, my feelings about myself, and not use people to make me feel good. But in recent years, after my divorce 7 years ago, I kind of got a little bit, not totally back into that behavior, but it became like, oh, I need to have a partner. I need to have someone in my life. And it was only when I finally was able to say, you know what, God, your will, not mine, that a wonderful man came into my life. But it's taken me a long time to learn to trust him with my self, with my true self. And it's interesting. I feel like something happened last week that made it even stronger. And it was simply that, you know, he had driven a couple hours to pick me up at an airport in the middle of nowhere, and my flight was delayed several hours, and he stayed. And then he drove through the snow to bring me home. And I thought, you know, here's a wonderful person who will do this for me, and I can trust him. And it also became bigger. It's like, you know, how many times has my higher power been there for me, and I can trust my higher power to take care of me. I can trust. I don't have to be responsible for everything myself. I don't have to seek self-validation in people, places, and things. I can trust that I can be loved and taken care of by my higher power. overall and by my partner. And I'm just so grateful for this evolution, and the 12 steps are a huge part of what has brought me this peace. And so I'm incredibly grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheer F. from New York. Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Monday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Monday, January the 6th, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 22054. That's 22054. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Karen K., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to
Good
be
morning.
Suggestive only.
Hello, it's Karen K.
Please go ahead, Karen.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation of what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you can give freely of what you can find, and join us. We will be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You surely will meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until